Yes, welcome back. You're all been going over these because it's going to be a fairly brief affair. So we're actually going to do a little experiment today. And I want to give you some background to that just now. And then we'll do the experiment and then you'll leave the data with me. And then I will put the data up on Blackboard. There's a folder in the middle where you find all the lectures that you've crafted up. And you'll find this PowerPoint presentation in there. And I will also put the results together with the worksheets and all the information you need in there. So that's where you find all the information. Right, let's just... So, as you may have guessed from what's up there, we're actually going to do a little memory experiment. And you've probably heard something about memory in first year, is that right? Okay, well, we are going to be talking about memory as well on Wednesday, and some of this will creep up again, but this is pretty much kind of a standalone thing, so, you know, you won't necessarily get much out of the lecture on Wednesday for this practical. But the whole practical really is based on a certain type of memory model, and this is this modal model of memory, and this is probably something you have come across in first year, yeah? But just to go through it again briefly, so the idea behind this type of memory model is that when something comes in from the outside, sensory input, it goes into a first stage of memory, sensory memory. And that memory store very much works on the basis of attention. Whatever is attended stays in, whatever is not attended gets lost immediately. So that doesn't even get processed. So, assuming then you have attended certain information, so something that has caught your attention in the corner of your eye, you turn around and you see a long lost friend, that will then move on to short-term memory. And it's kind of a serial process. It has to go through sensory memory, it then goes into short-term memory. And the idea here is that the mechanism by which items stay in short-term memory is rehearsal. And this is this very famous example. You try and you look up a phone number in the phone book and you keep rehearsing it over and over again until you get to the phone to actually dial the number. Well, this was in the olden days when there weren't mobile phones. This is kind of the idea behind this. You need to keep rehearsing, otherwise you will forget. Yeah? So that's short-term memory. So the mechanism is rehearsal. Unrehearsed information gets lost. Now the next stage in this type of memory model then is long-term memory. And everything that gets into long-term memory has to pass through short-term memory. And only, of course, what is still in short-term memory has been rehearsed long enough goes into long-term memory. There then it is stored, ideally forever, but of course some information may just be lost over time because you never ever use it, you never ever retrieve it. Now the point about these modal models of memory very much is that it's serial, it starts off with sensory input going into sensory memory, only what you attend stays in there, it passes from there into short-term memory, only one gets rehearsed enough, then has a chance to pass into long-term memory. Okay? So that is one model, and I say it's only one model of how memory may function, and that's the model we're working with. Okay? Right, so the idea then is very much behind this that for short-term memory, rehearsal is the mechanism of attention. Therefore, the more information is rehearsed, the more often information is rehearsed, the better it should be remembered in long-term memory. Yeah, you can follow that argument. That would be what comes out of this type of model. Yeah? Yep, nodding heads, shaking heads. Okay, great. Right, so that's the general idea then. And that was very much the idea in the early 70s. Along came Craig and Watkins and did an experiment to see whether that was actually true. And it's actually quite an elegant experiment. And basically what they did was they made people listen to a list of words. And each word, they were all spoken in a... Anyway, it was a list of words that were spoken out one word at a time, and the words had the same distance between them. So, for cold, day, fish, track, dirt, blah, blah, blah. Okay, the task was to keep a word that started with a certain letter in mind until the next word starting with that letter came along. So for instance, if the letter was D, the task would have been to remember day until dirt came along, and then you needed to replace day with the word dirt until the next word that started with a D came along, in which case dirt needed to be replaced by that word. So the task was always to keep in mind the last word starting with, in this case, the letter D. So the reason they did this was because they wanted to manipulate the amount of time that a word got rehearsed. So, for instance, if you have two or three words between, let's say, day and dirt, you would rehearse for the amount of time until the word dirt comes along. So with two or three words, you have fairly long rehearsal time. It could just be the next word or the one after the next, in which case the rehearsal time would go down. Yeah? So the prediction would very much be, if you have to replace the word more quickly, so you have less time to rehearse, you should be less likely to remember this word later on. If you have more time to rehearse, it would be more likely that you would remember the word later on. Is that logic clear to everybody? Yeah? Okay. So, now based on these mental models, then the prediction would be that if there are more words in between the two words starting with a D, that word should be remembered better. Now, Craig and Watkins showed that that wasn't actually the case. How well a word was remembered was very much independent of the amount of time people spent rehearsing it. Okay? And this is just, at the bottom here, it's just an illustration of what I said earlier. So, in this particular list, you have dog, baby, drain, school, drink, eat. So, the word dog would get about half the time of rehearsal than the word bee, just because there's fewer words intervening. Okay? Right, so, just to repeat again, in this case, so D would be rehearsed roughly twice as long as dog, but it's not more likely to be remembered later. So it seems, at least from the result of this study by Craig and Watkins, that rehearsal wasn't the whole story at all. Now, the question is, of course, what is it then that makes things pass into long-term memory? And what Craig and Watkins came up with, that it is maybe the type of processing as opposed to the amount of rehearsal that determines whether something gets passed into long-term memory. Now, what do I mean by processing? So, what the distinction that Craig again very much makes is that between shallow and deep processing. And the idea really is that shallow processing focuses very much on like surface features of things, colors, edges, whatever, you have pictures, or in the case of words, one example is how many closed letters are in a word. So in that case, you look at the word, and what you'll focus on is the A's and A's and E's, but you may not even really be aware of what the word is. Yeah? Shallow processing. As opposed to deep processing, which focuses on the meaning. So you need to extract the meaning of the word, and for instance, the task would be, is it a word or a non-word? In order to decide that, you need to extract the meaning of the word. You can do that with a word, you cannot do it with a non-word. So you have to extract the meaning. You could make a sentence with that word. It's task, but you have to actually extract the meaning of the word. And that's deep processing. So their idea was that it's the type of processing that will determine whether something moves into long-term memory or not. And the prediction is that if you process something deeply, if you process the meaning of something, then it's more likely to get into long-term memory. And that is the experiment we're going to do today. We're actually going to do a little memory experiment where we do shallow processing for one list of words, we do deep processing for another list of words. We'll see what the results will be. You will be doing the statistics, and then you'll be writing a practical report. Okay. It's going to be a handout, and that handout has two pages. Don't pass it around yet. You need to work in pairs. One of you needs to be the experimenter, and one needs to be the subject. So don't swap in between. One has to be the experimenter, one has to be the subject. So please group in pairs. Thank you. page that Juliet was half round doesn't have the words on it, don't turn it over so that whoever is the subject cannot see the word list. Yep. So keep it, please, at the page that Juliet hands out at the top page. And then you need to decide who's going to be the experiment, who's going to be the subject. Subject is not to see the handout. Right.
Thank you. Right, Sam.
Well, you write the results, literally two numbers, list one, five, list two, five, or whatever, on a piece of paper that you'll hand to Juliet or me. Anybody got any idea what that could be on there? There's a worksheet similar to what you got in your last, what is it called? Yeah, with Victoria. So it's probably very similar to that. Remember, you need to attach that and also what you did with Victoria. So she needs to be attached to the practical as well. I've forgotten when the deadline is. I think it's the 6th of November, is that right? So don't forget to hand in. Yeah, you should find all the information about methods and things like that on Blackboard. So you should have a pretty good idea what needs to go into the methods section anyway, for how you've done it. Okay, so is everybody happy? Or do you have any questions?
Thank you. No, I have